Today on a special Rambling About Cars, we're talking electric vehicles, lots of electric vehicles, electric trucks, what's going on there, electric sports cars, electrified vehicles. It's an electrified episode, and we might have a few internal combustion things to discuss here and there.
Yeah, we totally.
So let's roll. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. Mr. Chris Bruce is across the way. And yes, we have a very special guest coming back to Rambling About Cars.
Hey guys, how are you?
Bruce, you should introduce him.
And his name is Tom Allegheny.
I was expecting that too. Come on, Smith.
I'm Tom Allegheny from Inside EVs. Nice to be back, guys.
Yes. Hey, it's great to have you back. I mean, if you want to know anything about EVs, Tom is the man. I mean, is there anything that you don't know about EVs? Maybe that's an easier question.
So sure. You know, there was a time when I knew everything about every production EV. Now, I've been doing EVs for a long time. I got my first EV in 2009. It was an all-electric Mini Cooper. I was in BMW's pilot program. That was like a kind of a learning experience. So from June of 2009 to today, my full-time vehicle has been an electric vehicle, fully electric vehicle. So I'm, you know, 13 years now driving electric vehicles. And I've driven pretty much every production electric vehicle made, you know, other than like, you know, Nirvana, you know, the Remax, some crazy expensive vehicles. But, you know, and there was a time like early on, 6, 7, 8 years ago, where I knew every spec from every EV out there because there was only 10 EVs. Mm-hmm. But now it's like every month we have new introductions, you know, new battery sizes, changing, you know, options. So I have to admit, I'm no longer up on every little electric vehicle tidbit that there is. I just can't keep up with that anymore. But that's a good thing because we have more options than we ever had.
That's true.
That is very true. And just to remind all of the ramblers out there, of course, Tom, you've been on the program before. And I'm just going to say it because I still think it's one of the coolest things ever. You didn't always drive an EV. You had a DeLorean that you were driving in the mid 80s when it was possibly the coolest moment to ever drive a DeLorean.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about that the last time. It was my uncle's DeLorean. Yeah. So I didn't own it, but I practically did. He like flipped me the keys and was just like, here, you know, keep it.
Yeah, it was, you know what I mean? It was years. 1985.
He got sick of it at that point. You know, it was like, you know, he bought it, the shiny new toy, and he drove it for a while. And then it became like a hassle climbing in and out of it. And he'd rather just drive his Bronco or whatever he had, some kind of SUV. And I just turned 17. He's like, why don't you come over and get the DeLorean? And I was like, yeah, I'll have it back by what, 8 or 9 o'clock? And he's like, no, you don't understand. Like, just take it. Like, keep it. Okay. So that was a lot of fun.
But that's one of those stories I could listen to over and over and over. Yeah, 17. No, just take the DeLorean. Yeah.
And I've also had some really cool combustion vehicles. I've always been a car enthusiast. I own 2 Honda CRX SIs. That's my favorite car of all time, honestly. Yeah. I'd love, if I had endless money, I'd love to find one, buy one, convert it to an EV. That would be like my dream. But yeah, I had 2 Honda CRX SIs, and on the 86 SI, I had a black, all black. I put a nitrous oxide kit on it. So that threw it an extra 50 horsepower. It only had 91 horsepower to begin with. So I was like adding 50% more horsepower, and that thing just hauled. It only weighed 1,800 pounds and I had 150 horsepower. So that was a lot of fun. And I also had a 93 twin turbo Mazda RX-7. And that car was a blast.
Poor Bruce. Bruce is silently weeping inside right now.
Yes, I am.
2001 Porsche Boxster S. Of course, a 1978 Velare. So, you know, we can't forget that.
Well,
I'm totally on board with that.
Now you've taken us into tangent land, so we have to do this. There is a vague, possible, maybe chance you might be buying a Ford Model A soon. And you and I were talking about it, and you said you would convert that to electric. And that sounds so damn cool. So
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm in the process of negotiating with my neighbor. My neighbor passed away. It was an older gentleman, really nice guy. I was really good friends with him. And I'm talking to his estate now. And they live out of state, and they don't really want to be hassled too much with the property. So I'm going to buy it as is. It needs a lot of work. There's two barns on the property. So I happened to go over and peek in one of the barns, and there was all kind of crazy cool stuff in there. There was like a 1941 Ford tractor that's in great shape, and a bunch of stuff. There's a Model A sitting in there too that I sent you a picture of. Now, I'm getting some feedback from the family that one of the grandchildren may want to come up and trailer that away.
Okay.
So, and that's fine, you know, and because he said when he was younger, he used to work on it with his grandfather. So, I mean, I would never separate something like that from family members, but you know, the initial conversations we had was, look, buy it and assume everything on the property. Like, we don't even want to come up and clean anything out. So, we'll see. They're really nice people. I really feel bad that the guy passed away. He's a really nice guy, old farmer. He owns, you know, this is like farming country where I live. And he owns 18 acres behind the property that I'm not buying. Ooh. That's farmland. So that's why he has a bunch of tractors and a bunch of old farming equipment and everything. But it's still possible that I'll end up getting that. And I almost hope the family comes and takes it. Number one, because they should. It's the family's car. And I think it's been in the family. Like, it might have been, like, they might be the original owners of this thing. And it's been in their family that long. And number two, like, I know that I will spend way more money on that than I have to spend on a project like that. And I will, like, convert it to electric and have it all refurbished and restored. And, like, I'll end up dumping, like, $40,000 into the thing. You know what I mean? Which is what it would cost to do it right, you know, and really restore it and put a battery and electric motor in it and everything. So we'll see. I almost hope they come and take it so I don't have another project that I don't have time for.
But I know exactly how you feel.
You could buy a wreck Nissan Leaf and just, like, transplant the powertrain in there. I mean, originally I was looking, because you and I were talking about this, like, it made 40 horsepower originally. So, you know, anything is kind of an upgrade at this point. Can you just imagine, like, a Leaf powertrain and a Model A, that could
much power. Like, you know, honestly, I would, you know, put like a 50 kilowatt hour, 40 kilowatt hour battery pack in there, maybe even 35, somewhere in that range with a, you know, an electric motor that had like 50 horsepower, like, and it would still be too fast.
It would be.
So, you know,
Bruce is always the devil on your shoulder when it comes to car stuff. Go ahead, dude. Smith, you should get that 86 Jag. You should get that. Ahead.
ASV12. Yeah, you should buy that. I tell you that all the time, man.
That's
not my money. I don't.
I'm actually glad we're starting the podcast this way, because this brings really great context to you, Tom. And it's why I value your opinion over everybody else when it comes to EVs, because you have that internal combustion experience, that internal combustion passion. So you're coming at it in my point of view with, like, the bright, broad frame of mind, and you add all of this extra context to it. Mm-hmm. And we should probably talk a little bit about some of the EVs that we're going to talk about.
Should we do that?
Maybe? We probably should. Where are we going to start, Bruce?
But Smith, before we cut in, I want to add one thing.
Yeah.
I think too often the perception is that people that are electric vehicle advocates aren't car guys, that too frequently, they're tree huggers, they're greenies, they're XYZ. Pete, they get put in a bucket. That's not the case. Honestly, I know a lot of my EV aficionados, a lot of my friends that are into EVs are also just car guys that have been into cars their whole life, like me. So, I'm glad you pointed that out, that you like that, but I just want to let you know, I'm not alone. Like, there's a lot of people that are really into EVs that have been into cars their whole life. It's not like the Prius, you know, the Prius people all just translated and went into EVs now. It's actual really car guys too, like them.
No, I mean, I've seen that for quite a while, and I think that's becoming more mainstream now. I see more and more on social media, like Ram Revolution that we're about to talk about. I was going through comments on our Motor One article, and I don't think there was anything like negative that I saw. And a year or maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago, like when Ford was talking about Lightning and Cybertruck, it was just, oh, that's not a real truck. That's not a blah, 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 blah. And it's like, here's Ram, maybe the truckiest truck that ever trucked, right? With just the larger than life kind of persona. And here are people saying, hey, you know what? That's pretty cool. I kind of like that. It sounds like it'll be a pretty neat truck. All these positive comments. Now, of course, we talked about the truck last week on last week's show, which you can go see where, Bruce?
Podcast at MotorOne.com, Motor One Podcast on YouTube, and MotorOne.com, the website. So it just depends on where you want to find it, but we're all over the place. As long as you search Motor One and Podcast, you will find us.
And you should also go over to Inside EVs, and then Tom has State of Charge.
Okay. You should do that too.
Yeah. there are so many things that we're going to be plugging through this episode, but Ram Revolution, we were talking about it last week. We've learned a little bit more about it since then. We know now that it's not a near production concept. It is just more of an abstract kind of concept vehicle. We know that the production version or Ram's electric truck will have a gasoline range extending engine as part of the package.
Well, but as Tom, an option, well, right?
As an option, yeah. Not all.
Yeah.
Has an option. But Tom, we really wanted to get your insight on Revolution. So Bruce and I were talking about it some last week when we take it in context with F-150 Lightning, which is really, it's like the Ford F-150 electrified. You know, with an electric powertrain. And then you have the Chevy Silverado SS, or not SS, but Silverado EV.
Yeah.
I'm getting ahead of myself. Silverado EV, that's its own new platform, unibody style, complete departure from the Silverado. And now here comes Ram Revolution, which is a concept here. It has styling similar to the Silverado EV, I think, but Ram still made it a point in their press release to note that this is a body on frame vehicle. Mm-hmm. And then you have, of course, Rivian. Cybertruck is eventually going to be here. It's kind of ironic that it's not here yet while we're talking about these other, but where is Ram falling in the grand scheme of this? Are they coming to the party late? Cause I know that was sort of the thought process going along, but maybe they're getting to the party just in time. I don't know. I would love to hear your take on where Ram is falling as we're just getting more and more electric trucks now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's interesting because I hear a lot of people talking, and I have a lot of some of the really hardened EV supporters talking about how manufacturers are late, like the ones that don't have a lot of electric vehicles for sale now. And while I'm a huge supporter of electric vehicles, I kind of disagree with that. I don't think Ram's late. I think they had to get a strong electric vehicle program rolling. You know, there's time to do it. It's getting late is what I would say. But now that they've announced this and kind of given us the time frame of 2025-ish, I don't think that's late. Don't forget, we're less than nationwide, we're under 10% electric vehicle adoption on new vehicle sales. So it's still a very small percent of overall sales. Now, it's increasing dramatically year over year. And that's something that the automakers have to really be cognizant of and not be late to the party. But as far as the truck goes, you know, Ford came out first and they built an electric F-150. They didn't try to go outside of their comfort zone. And, mm-hmm. you know, and that helped them get to market first because they repurposed a lot of the vehicle. I mean, if you look at an F-150 Lightning, if you didn't really know the different headlights, the different taillights, you just think it's a regular F-150. Mm-hmm. So, and all of the interior, you know, the seats, you know, everything's right, straight out, regular F-150. All they did was electrify their F-150. And that helped them get to market earlier. And they're benefiting from it now. But that's one approach. Then the approach is, which is also, I think, smart in its own right, is don't be first, you know?
Yeah.
Watch what some of the other people do and learn from their mistakes and maybe time it to when you think the market is ready. Or let's gauge if people want electric trucks, because even within Ford, they massively underestimated the demand for the truck. And I talked to Darren Palmer, Ford's VP of electric vehicle programs globally. I talked to him about this a few times. And, you know, I asked him flat out, well, you know, the first year they were calling for making 40,000 Lightning a year. And for crying out loud, they got 200,000 reservations in eight months. So they had to massively change their plans. They had to increase the size of the plant that they're building it at in Detroit, which I visited last month. You know, they had to go back to their suppliers and say, we need more parts and everything. So for Chevy and Dodge to be sitting on the sidelines and kind of watching this and saying, okay, guys, this is, you know, when we bring these things to market, it's not going to be a 40, 50,000 a year run. We got to hit the ground running to be able to make, you know, 100,000, 200,000 of these. So now they have time to negotiate contracts with their suppliers, get enough batteries, get enough parts. So, you know, they're probably going to hit the ground running, say, better than what Ford did. And so there's advantages to come into the dance a little bit later. You know, if you were to say that, oh, this is coming out in 2030, I'd say, oh, God, that's too late. But, you know, it's given them more time to engineer it, to do things that, say, Ford couldn't do, like rear wheel steering. That's a great option on a big vehicle like this. I had a couple, 2 months ago, you know, I own an F-150 Lightning and a Rivian R1T. Those are my two family vehicles. That's me and my wife just drive electric pickup trucks. But then GM loaned me a Hummer EV for a week. So in my driveway, I had Rivian, a Lightning, and a Hummer. I mean, how cool of a lineup is that, you know? And to be honest with you, and I did a video on this and I posted an Inside of Visa. I compared the three and I scored them like in 10 different categories and declared a winner. And the one thing that was so much better driving-wise than any of the vehicles was the rear steering on the Hummer EV. That, I mean, for me making like U-turns, and my driveway has like a landing, a circular landing, and I've got to go back and forth with my Lightning like three times to just to turn it around. And the Hummer was just like one swing back up and drive out. It was like, it makes such a difference. So that rear steering, that's something that coming a little bit late to the party, you're going to be able to have the same with Chevy. Chevy's going to have that for the Silverado and GM. GMC is going to have it, their electric pickup truck. That's something you can't engineer in like, you know, 14 months, like what Ford put the Lightning together in. Having a dedicated platform, that takes time. So, you know, Ford got the jump on them. They got out there first, but now we expect the Silverado to be that much better than the Lightning. And quite honestly, we don't know a lot about the Ram yet. Let's face it. This is a concept. They floated a lot of stuff about having a third row seating and, you know, the flip down seats and we talked about that last week, Seth. Yeah, some cool concepts, but we don't really know what's going to be in this truck. We don't know how far it's going to go, the battery size. They're saying up to 350 kilowatt charging. That's great if it's true. A lot of people say that, and then it comes to market, it's less. Their 800-volt battery system, very good that they're doing that. That's one of the things Ford couldn't do by coming to market early, but Ford's next generation, which I think is going to come out around 2025, is going to have an 800-volt battery. They haven't formally announced it, but I've put enough pieces together with the people I've talked at Ford and some of the information that I've gotten that's going to be, they're going to have an 800-volt system by then. So the Silverado, I expect to be a better electric vehicle than the Lightning. And I do expect Dodge's truck to be even better than the Silverado. It should be, you know, they're having more time to engineer it. And, you know, that's the way it should be. And then hopefully, you know, Ford will one up them with the second generation Lightning and, other electric trucks. They're going to electrify the Ranger, you know, probably the Maverick, you know, so, you know, this is the way it should be. And there are advantages to come in the market later.
I'm glad you mentioned Ford here, because that was something that I was talking a little bit about last week. We kind of flip it around. Ford certainly did get to the market ahead of General Motors and Ram with the full size pickup truck, an electric truck. And it really is an F-150. You know, it's like a standard F-150 with electric motors. But we know Ford, like you just said, we know Ford is coming out with a next generation truck. I mean, Farley teased it a while ago when he made it a point to say there's another electric truck different than this one that's coming. And that's going to be more, you know, like the, okay, this is our new platform that's going to be different from F-150. But in that respect, Ford then might be coming to the party late. Maybe they came too early with the Lightning and now they're going to have Chevrolet with their, I guess, quote unquote, next gen Silverado EV truck, and Ram potentially with their next gen EV truck. Maybe Ford is coming to the party last. I don't know. What's kind of your take there?
No, I don't think so. I think that it was very wise of them to jump out. Number one, it's giving the brand an image that they're cutting edge technology, that they're ahead of the pack, they're first. And don't forget, you can't minimize how much they're learning from this truck. That mm-hmm. the other manufacturers, they've got a fleet of, you know, a couple hundred vehicles out there that they're driving around beta testing. Ford's got, you know, thousands. By the end of next year, we'll have, you know, well over 100,000, maybe 140,000, 150,000 customers with vehicles on the road where they're getting real world data from. They're learning about the batteries. They're learning about the capacity. Like, it's one of the things that Darren Palmer and I talked about how much of the usable capacity should the vehicle have as compared to the total capacity. And he said, look, we're monitoring this on our fleet, and we're going to learn exactly what the right balance of usable capacity versus total capacity is. And he said, we might end up opening up more of the battery based on what we're learning from our customers' uses. So, you know, I'm not going to, you know, agree with the fact that or say that I believe that they came too early. There's negatives to that, but I think the positives way outweigh the negatives in Ford's case. Look, they're getting so much good press from the Lightning. Let's face it. I mean, they're winning every freaking award. There was the Motor Trend, the award that just came out today, North American Truck of the Year. They won.
Don't wait. You're teasing our next segment.
Oh, well, okay. Now we'll talk about that next segment. But they're winning like every award there is. And, mm-hmm. and I own the truck. And I'll tell you, you know, I have the Rivian R1T and I have the Lightning. And when I got them, my plan was to get by both of them, drive them for a while, make some content, and then probably sell one of them. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I fully believed I was going to sell the Lightning. I fully believed that the Rivian was just going to be too cool, you know, because the Rivian is a cool truck. I mean, everywhere I go, there's a crowd of people walking around me, ask me questions about it and everything. Nobody even notices the Lightning anymore. It's like, they just think it's a black F-150. And there's a cool factor to that. You know what I mean? It's like a hip, really cool vehicle. But I'm telling you now, after owning them for like 6 months, if you put a gun to my head today, I think I would have to say, no, I'm going to keep the Lightning over the Rivian. I haven't made up my mind yet, but it's won me over. It is a fantastic vehicle. And for long road trips, like if I'm going to drive hundreds of miles, the Lightning is absolutely the vehicle to take over the Rivian.
Okay. Well, that's another interesting point there that maybe we can talk about a little bit. We do have, I mean, we've been talking about the Detroit automakers, right? Ram, Ford, General Motors. Rivian is out there. Tesla, Cybertruck, sooner or later, it's going to be there.
It's got to come eventually, right?
there's the Lordstown Endurance.
Pickup truck. I pre-ordered one of those, by the way.
There are a lot of other young companies out there.
What's that? Getting a refund on that? I was being an asshole. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's coming. I'm telling you, that's coming.
Okay.
With Detroit picking up speed here in the electric truck realm, will these younger companies have to really innovate more to try to garner attention? Or will they just kind of fade out of existence? You're loving the Rivian.
It's going to be harder for the startups. Once the OEMs are mass producing the legacy brands, the major brands are mass producing EVs, it's going to be that much harder for startups to get traction. You know, we know that, the companies like Lucid and Rivian that are, you know, they're producing already. They're kind of struggling. Fisker is coming to market now. You know, they have a huge advantage that they were producing vehicles when the legacy brands kind of weren't yet. You know, and Rivian's only electric vehicle competition is the Lightning. Electric truck competition is the Lightning. But, you know, after owning both of the vehicles, I will contend it's not competition. they're so different of vehicles that they don't compete with each other. Honestly, the Rivian is a lifestyle vehicle. That to me competes more with like a Range Rover or Land Rover. And the F-150 is a pickup truck. It's a working pickup truck. And the Rivian is not in any way, shape, or form a workman's pickup truck. So, you know, they really don't cross compete as much as people assume they do because they're the first two electric pickup trucks out there. But yes, you're 100% right. It's going to get harder and harder for these startups to get traction once the existing brands are really all in and just, you know, that you walk into a showroom and half the vehicles there are BEVs. That it's going to make, it's going to be much harder for the startups to sell their case at that point.
Well, kind of speaking a little bit on that topic, let's talk about the NACTOY, the North American Car, Truck, and Utility of the Year Award winners for this year. Because as we're recording this episode, those announcements just came out today. And so let's go through them. And because there are a lot of EVs there, there are some non-EVs there. But it was a very, very interesting year because two of the winners were electric vehicles. One of them was not. And it kind of shows where the industry is going. That kind of, I'll share it in just a second here, but kind of the cars, maybe possibly they're not quite there yet, but maybe 1 or 2 years down the line they will be. But trucks and utilities, that's where the winners were in terms of electric vehicles. So I'm going to throw this up here.
And of course we had the Lightning that we've been talking about, that won for best truck. Competition there was the Lordstown Endurance and the Chevrolet Silverado ZR2. Tom, I mean, was there really any doubt, honestly, that Lightning was going to take this one?
You know, I haven't driven the other vehicles, but I would say no. You know, I would say no. You know, I tell you, the Lightning is it deserves the awards that it's won. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, it's won a lot of awards so far. And that's not, you know, by accident. It's a really great truck and it does so many things well. It's the first production vehicle that you can pair it with a additional system and power your home with, which I just installed in my house. I'm actually working on that video today. I'm going to have it up in a few days. Intelligent backup power system where the truck powers the house in a power outage. It's got the Pro Power onboard. Now that's not unique to the Lightning. The other F-150s have it, but you know, the fact that this thing can just power a job site. You could build a house in the middle of the woods and, you know, drive your truck up there and like you've got more power than any of your tools could ever need. It does so many things so well that it's deserving of these awards.
And it might be a good time to maybe just mention really quick. I know there have been some YouTubers that have said, oh, it doesn't work. It doesn't work in the cold. You mean like your regular car where the battery dies when it's 5 degrees outside, or like the diesel truck that you have where the diesel gels when it gets really cold? And then in the really cold climates, what do people do? They plug in their vehicles with engine block heaters to keep them warm. And then you're trying to tow and the range gets cut way down when you're trying to tow. You mean like your fuel mileage that goes from 17 to like 9 when you're towing a car with your truck? I just had to jump in there and say that because I'm finding these arguments just more and more nonsensical every day. It's like,
well, you know,
it's, I think, combustion vehicles don't do as good in the cold. Combustion vehicles don't do as good towing. It's like,
you're 100% right. But you know, to be fair, there are things that a Lightning won't do as well as a gas or combustion pickup truck. You know, it's, you know, but I think then people focus on like the one Achilles heel and say, it's rubbish. You know, I can't tow, you know, from North Dakota to Texas twice a month, you know, 10,000 pounds without having to stop 18 times. And you're right.
Yeah,
you're right. But, you know, it doesn't have to do every single thing better. It might not be good for you because you need it to tow 10,000 pounds, 800 miles. For me, if I needed to, if the only thing I would ever need to do is, let's say I bought a boat and I wanted to tow it down to the New Jersey shore, which is like 80 miles away, whatever. Under any circumstance, any size boat that I can tow with that thing, I'd be able to take it to the shore and back. Mm-hmm. So for me, it would work. But, you know, we have to understand it's not going to check every single box and be better, 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 better. It's going to be, you know, better, absolutely, better, better, yep, better, worse, better, 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 worse, better, you know. So,
yeah,
you know, there are things, cold weather, electric vehicles don't perform as well in the cold weather. Their range is reduced, but, you know, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. I've done a little bit of work, yep, little bit of work with that. Mm-hmm. It's manageable. You just have to be smart. Like you said, you plug in your diesel, you know, engine block heater, but then you won't plug in your EV. You'll complain that, you know, yeah, oh, it doesn't, you know, the range got cut by 40% because I cold soaked it in negative 5 degrees Fahrenheit for 18 hours and then hopped in it. Well, if you were to just run even a 120 volt extension cord out there, the vehicle would have been keeping its battery warm and you know, and then instead of losing 40% of your range, you would have lost 28%, you know, 25-28%, which makes a big difference. So, mm-hmm, you know, but a lot of people on YouTube, you know that, and I'm on YouTube, so you know, you have to put me in that pile for a little bit at least. It's all about getting views, and the sensational videos get views. Put disaster in your title and it gets more views. It could be the same video. So, you know, towing disaster gets 300,000 views, you know, towing, yep, success got 10,000 views, you know.
So, hey, Smith, listen to him. Podcast disasters this week's episode title.
Exactly. Yeah.
Don't search Rambling About Cars disasters. Yeah. I'm pretty sure you're going to find like some critical like videos out there of us somewhere. So
you have to have that face too. You know, disaster has to be like.
Exactly. Yeah.
You need to go to podcast, Motor One Podcast on YouTube for that one, folks. There's no way I can equate that expression to words.
Oh yeah, I forgot there are people on just the audio.
We have Spotify. We have lots of great fans on Spotify, on Apple, on Google. But you know, there's, as cool as the F-150 Lightning is, there are other vehicles to talk about here. Mm-hmm. And EV6, Kia EV6 won the NAC Toy Award for best utility vehicle.
It sure did.
So that's the second electric vehicle on the winner's list this year. It was going up against the Cadillac Lyriq and the Genesis GV60. I'm trying to remember the vote count. I don't remember the exact number, well, Bruce and I both kind of wrote this one up today because Bruce, you wrote up our article. Hey, watch the live stream as it happened.
I did the live stream post.
You had all the finalists, and I went through and then plugged in all the info at the end.
I didn't look at the vote, sorry.
Lightning, it was like just an overwhelming number of votes for Lightning.
I'm shocked. EV6. Shocked, I said.
Shocked. Oh my gosh. Kia EV6. It wasn't as many as Lightning, but it was still a pretty healthy margin over the others. I haven't had a chance to drive this car yet, and I really want to because I think it looks fantastic. I would rather have this than the Ioniq 5, to be honest. Even the Ioniq 5N when it comes out, looks fantastic. It's got great performance in GT guys, and even as just the standard model. It's no slouch. Tom, deserving of the award?
Yeah, I think it's a great EV. You know, it comes in a lot of different flavors too, which is, I think that's important, that, you know, it offers something for a lot of different taste buds. You know, it's, you can get it the rear wheel drive version with the small battery pack. You can get the, you know, with the all wheel drive, you can get the GT line, you can get the GT, mm-hmm, which is crazy fast, the GT. So yeah, I think it's a good package. You know, I will say that I really like the Ioniq 5. It's you know, brother. Just something about the Ioniq 5 styling, that retro pixel look, that just it's got me. I'm as much as I love both vehicles, honestly, if you if you put them both in the out and said take one, I'd probably take the keys to the Ioniq 5. I know it's it's not as exciting as the EV6 is like a sporty SUV. It's like
that's a good way to describe it. Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah,
it is, and the Ioniq 5 is just kind of like ho hum, like you know. But to me, it just does it for me. I don't know what it is. It's just. From the first time I saw it, I was like, wow, that looks good. And then I got one to drive. I mean, I've driven them many times, but when I had one for extended drive, I was just like, yeah, I would buy one of these. Like, you know, if I didn't have two electric trucks on order, I would, maybe this might be in my garage. So, but yeah, I mean, the EV6 charges exceptionally like the Ioniq 5 does. It can charge, you know, to 80% in 18 minutes. So, yeah. You know, think about that for the road tripping, you know, you pull up to a 350 kilowatt DC fast charger, plug it in, you walk inside, you know, they're usually in like, you know, parking lots where there's like a convenience store or a Panera or something like that, Starbucks. You walk in, you use the restroom, you grab a coffee and you walk out and you're at 80%, you know, you unplug and you head to the next, charger or your destination. So it's a great package and at a reasonable price.
So, Tom, I have what might be a complicated question, what might not be a complicated question for you, because we haven't talked about it. So the Acura Integra won best car, and it was going up against an electric vehicle. It was going up against what, the G80 EV?
The G80?
And what was the third? I can't remember.
Nissan Z. It's a very interesting mix because, I mean, obviously with the Integra, you're talking about the five-door hatch. Front wheel drive with a manual. G80 is sizable luxury electric sedan.
Yep.
Nissan Z, little two-seater sports car. I think what a very cool mix.
It's an interesting mix. But what I wanted to ask Tom was, so I guess how long until you see this every one of them, car, truck, utility, just EV check, check, check across the board. What do you think there?
So now, do you mean for these annual
for NACTOY award?
I think we're about 3 years from that. I think by 2025, 2026-ish, that all of the new introductions that the manufacturers really put the weight of their brand behind will be BEVs. You know, and yeah, they're going to still make, you know, combustion vehicles, but the R&D isn't going to be there. They're not going to pour money into them. All of the big money, the tech, all the cutting edge stuff, you know, is just going to get dumped in their BEVs. And we're only about 3 years away from that.
You know, that's a good point that you make there. Not that EVs will be the only vehicles available for buyers, but that's where the emphasis from automakers is going. That's probably going to make them, to whatever degree, something better than what you're going to find with an internal combustion engine.
Yeah, I mean, I talk to the manufacturers now all the time, the product planners.
Yep.
They're already defunding their ICE programs. Now, they're not going to come out and admit it, but they're already pulling, you know, slashing the budgets of their ICE vehicles, and all that money is getting poured into R&D for their EVs, and those EVs are going to take a couple of years to come out, you know. So that's why I'm saying two, three years, somewhere in that time frame. What you're going to see is, you know, the ICE vehicles are going to get like, you know, mild refreshes and mild updates, and you know, but the all the money is going to get put in the BEVs. By the end of this decade, guys, you know, 80% of the vehicles sitting on showroom floors are going to be fully electric. That's what I believe. I know a lot of people think I'm a little bullish on that.
But, I don't think so.
All right. Well,
I mean, I've been doing this job for 11, 12 years now. No, you're right. I think that's the way, unless the, you know, kind of the recession they talk about happens and maybe, you know, things change and, you know, that I think in the long term, certainly electric vehicles are the future. Maybe it ends up being a little longer than that. But right now, sitting here, I agree with you 100%.
And you know what makes me really believe that? And it isn't just that I'm bullish on electric vehicles. It's the conversations I have with the companies and the product planners. And, you know, like I make it a point when I go on the media drives, you know, at the dinners, you know, you sit down, you talk to the product planners and the people, the representatives of the company. And I really try to feel them out about long-term electric vehicle plans, you know, and especially after you have a couple drinks and you start talking about, you know, where do you guys really think you're going to be in 8 years, 7, 8 years. And, you know, you hear how internally in the company, there's power struggles and there's decision. People are deciding how much to cut from this program, put in this program. But I almost always get to the point where I get some information that tells me they're looking at towards this end of this decade to go all in on electric vehicles. And, totally. You know, yeah. And that's every manufacturer. And yeah, there's ones that have come out and said, we're going to be fully electric by 2030s at Volvo and, you know, even Porsche.
Yeah.
What Porsche said by, I think at 2030, 80% of their sales will be fully electric, not electrified, fully electric. That's Porsche.
Yeah.
You know, no, and that's 7 years from now. That's crazy. You know?
When we stop this recording, I will tell you a story because I'm not sure if I can say it on air. But yeah, I have heard something very similar from a very large automaker. Yeah. So
I mean, yeah. By the end of this decade, to me, it's kind of, you know, that's it. It's we'll still be selling some ICE vehicles, but you're looking at 15, 20% of overall sales. Mm-hmm. It'll kind of be like flipped to where we are now almost.
Basically. Yeah.
It's certainly going at a fast pace. I also get a little bit of a sense that maybe not concern so much, but a little bit of wariness, you know, wariness about, okay, this is where everything is going, whether we want it to or not. I mean, have you gotten any sense of that where it's not really a case of this is where we want to go? It's more of a case of, holy crap, this is happening. And, you know, we're going along for the ride.
Well, you know, people are reluctant for change. And, you know, a lot of people, and one of the worst things that I think is for electric vehicle adoption is when you hear these, we're banning cars, banning gas cars by this date or whatever, you know, and that makes people feel like, you know, they're being told what to do. And they are, you know, something's being taken away from them. I like my ICE, even though like nobody likes going to a gas station and filling up with diesel or gas and, you know, giving that guy your 70, 80 bucks or whatever it is, you know, nobody likes doing that, but we also don't like being told what we can and can't buy. And I'd much rather see people buying electric vehicles because they want to, because they're better and they are better, you know, and there's certain things they can't do better at this point. I, you know, admitted to it earlier, but that's all going to dramatically improve over the course of the next few years. Prices are going to come down on EVs. Ranges are going to be longer. Charging is going to be faster. They're going to be so much better in 5 years than what they are now. And you know, I know that because 5 years ago I was driving EVs and the EVs today are so much better than what they were back then. So, you know, I think that's the issue, guys, is that, you know, we don't like being told what to do. Particularly Americans don't like being told what to do, but I don't think anybody does. And this thing that government is taking away our cars and making us drive these electric vehicles, that's troublesome. And I don't like that messaging at all. I don't think we need it. I think we will get to an all electric fleet just because people will say they're cheaper, they cost less, they're easier to refuel. Although, you know, you might be like, really easier to refuel that? Yeah, they really are. You don't have to go anywhere. You just plug in at home if you can at home. If you live in an apartment complex, a little bit more complicated, but that infrastructure is going to get a lot better in the next decade. So I think that's the biggest problem. I know it was a long-winded answer, but I think
not long-winded.
Drive them.
Not long-winded at all, and it's a great point. And I mean, you touched on something there as well. Nobody's being forced into an electric vehicle. There are still going to be combustion vehicles. There are still, you know, even new vehicles going forward. There's still going to be combustion vehicles for a while. You can always stick with an older vehicle. Used car. There are a gazillion used cars out there.
Thank you.
Nobody's being forced, right?
Right. If you were the guy, well, I can't say this anymore because unfortunately I moved, but if you were the guy formerly around the corner from me with the MGA in his garage, If you want to own an MGA from the, what would that be, very early 60s, you can still be that person. I doubt that there is going to be a point of time in our lifetimes where you're not going to be able to get gasoline to put it in that vehicle. Mm-hmm. But for the vast majority of commuters, or for the vast majority of people, I think electricity, or Smith, you and I have had this debate endlessly, and you know how I feel, and I know how you feel. Hydrogen maybe as an alternative, but you know, gasoline is going to become less and less of the most prevalent fuel available, but it will still be there. But alternatives will kind of take over that spot.
I see an electric future where battery electric and then hydrogen fuel cell electric have a relationship similar to gasoline and diesel today.
Maybe. I still don't agree with you, but fine.
A majority of battery electric, you know, will be used for just, you know, regular daily commutes, things like that. If you have applications where, you know, maybe large truck towing, this is all dependent on a hydrogen infrastructure, of course.
Sure.
That's
the problem. You need that hydrogen infrastructure, but the hydrogen infrastructure just kind of fits in with the structure that's already in place. You pull in with your big truck, pulling your horse trailer, 300-400 miles on a one-way trip. You go in there, you tank up with hydrogen in about 5 minutes, and you're back on the road. But we need the infrastructure to get there. But if it comes in, that could be, I see that maybe a little bit longer term.
Yeah, I mean, hydrogen works. I've driven the Honda Clarity. I've driven the Hyundai Nexo. It works. It's just that getting that infrastructure in for personal transportation, honestly, guys, I don't see it happening. I do see it happening for long-haul trucking, mm-hmm. and I see it happening for aviation. Because aviation is really easier. Yeah, absolutely. Good friend of mine actually founded a company called Zero Avia, and they make hydrogen drivetrains for planes, and they're doing fantastic right now. And
FAA like certifications.
Oh God, yeah, yeah, that? Yeah. They got contracts for United, from United, yeah, and different companies. If you look it up, Zero Avia, the guy who started the company, Val Miftikoff, he originally made his money. He started an electric vehicle charging station company called eMotorworks, and he sold it to NLX. And then he used that money to found Zero Avia. He actually asked me if I wanted to work for him when the company had like 3 employees in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. I fully believe this guy was going to, see this to fruition, but it was just too much of a lifestyle change for me, you know, do what he wanted me to do. I thought it would have been a fantastic opportunity, but it wasn't the right time in my life to completely change everything I was doing and go work for a startup. They're getting, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in funding now and doing fantastic. And for aviation, it's even easier than long range trucking, because mm-hmm. you only have to put a damn hydrogen fueling station at the airport. Like, you know, sure. The plane's got to land and take off from the airport. So,
yeah,
you know, it makes it really easy. And he's doing great with that. So I see it for that, guys. But for personal transportation, I don't ever see us. And I mean, I know ever is a long time. I don't ever see us building out hydrogen refueling stations, the tens of thousands of them that we would need, like we have gas stations everywhere. It would just cost too much.
They are very expensive to set up.
Tom, you and I are on the same page here, man.
I don't think so either. You know, if you see studies in like towns, like don't want to have them installed in their township. They're afraid of, you know, they think Hindenburg, whether it's true or not.
Because gasoline doesn't burn.
Yeah, it doesn't blow up. It burns, but it doesn't, you know, so hydrogen doesn't either.
Well, I've had experiences.
Yeah, no, it can. But, you know, in any event, there's been cases where people like, you know, hydrogen fueling stations been, you know, proposed for an area, and the people that lived in the area were like, you know, so you'd have to put these things everywhere in order for personal transportation to use them. I just don't see that ever happening, but I do see it being a piece of the puzzle, you know, with long haul trucking, with aviation, maybe other uses, but I don't think we're ever going to get in a hydrogen car, you know, in your garage and it's going to be your daily driver. Sorry, Seth.
We continue to disagree on this one, man.
Could be. Hey, we'll see where we're at in like, you know, another 70 or 80 years. I'll still be around. So
you're going to be around 80 years, man. You're healthier than me.
Well, no, I'm not healthy. I'm just banking on technology by then, you know, being to the point where I can just download into my robot body.
There you go. Okay. Well, let's talk about another vehicle.
We should move on. As we're getting a little bit longer, Corvette.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to pull up.
Since we're talking electrification, of course, we know the Corvette E-Ray Hybrid is coming.
Yep,
Chevrolet told us as much. And we just, was it yesterday? I think we got some spy photos.
Today, man.
They were today? Okay.
They were today. Sorry.
Yeah. I need that robot body soon, man, because because the mental capacity up here, it's starting to go. More importantly, though, we got an official teaser from Chevrolet.
Yeah. And the debut is, as of recording, what? Wednesday?
January 17th is when it's going to debut.
So I think it's next Friday as of we're recording, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah.
January 17th. Basically
next week or maybe early soon. The following week. Yeah.
When will then be now? Soon. And I mean, if you haven't seen it already, you can go to motorone.com and just type Corvette. If it's not already up on the main page, you can see the spy photos. You can see the teasers. More importantly, you can see Chevrolet's Corvette E-Ray visualizer that accidentally leaked online and was up there for a little bit before it was taken down. So big surprise to everybody. It looks like a Corvette. It actually looks a lot like a Z06.
It's like a Z06 and a standard Stingray kind of melded together. It's got Z06 parts and it's got standard Stingray parts, and it's got a completely different powertrain underneath.
It's got the wider, the wider stance, especially at the back. Yep. It's got the Z06 style side intakes. The front fascia, I haven't had a really crystal clear look at the front fascia, but I believe that's basically Z06 as well. At the back, though, instead of the center exit exhaust, it has the typical Stingray exhaust.
Yep.
That's because and we're saying this like it's already debuted. So we should clarify, it hasn't debuted. This is what we've heard, and it's most likely the case. It'll have the 6.2 liter V8 from the Stingray with an electric motor driving the front wheels. And we don't obviously know power or anything yet. No. But it's a big deal. Why is it a big deal? Because it will be the first electrified Corvette.
Yep. This is all-wheel drive Corvette.
And the first all-wheel drive Corvette. So, and that's coming just around the corner. And as we move to an electric future, Tom, I got to go back to you again. Are you taking, if you had a choice between this or Z06, which one are you taking?
I don't know, to be honest with you. You know, I'm not a big fan of the hybrids. I think, you know, it all should be one way or the other. And I'm also not a fan of the name. I'm sick of manufacturers just sticking an E in front of it or an I, you know, BMW I, the Jaguar I-Pace.
It's the intelligent one.
Didn't you talk about the i3 and like do promotion and stuff for that?
Well, not really. I mean, I was a customer, but, you know, about it. I'd never worked for BMW, but I still think it's a great little EV. You know, I mean, it had its flaws. It should have went further. It was very expensive, but I mean, carbon fiber frame and all the stuff they did. I mean, it's a technological marvel, the i3. It really is. You know, it didn't kind of look a little frumpy, but, you know. But I mean, the naming, I just like, why couldn't they just give it a cool name? Like, to me, like E-Ray, like, just
stop making a big deal. Like every automaker photo we get with an electric vehicle or a hybrid, there's always like, there has to be, it's obligatory.
Yeah.
Three or four shots of somebody standing there with a charging cord about to plug it in. It's like, do you get photos of your Ram 1500 where they're standing at the fuel pump about to fuel it up?
Exactly.
No.
So, you know, that bothers me a little bit. I don't love the name. And honestly, I would just want an all electric, that, you know, I mean, you know, we've seen that, you know, all electric sports cars, you know, can be incredibly powerful and fast and, you know, and all that. And, you know, it's just like, just enough with it. Just make a fully, you know, combustion one, and then just jump to a fully electric one. I don't know, you know, having two powertrains, does it have two motors up front or one? I haven't really followed this.
We don't know for sure yet.
It has two, like the BMW i8 has.
Mm-hmm. We don't know for sure. I mean, we've heard that the V8 will drive the rear wheels, electric power will drive the front, giving it all wheel drive.
Yeah. Yep.
We don't know power levels yet. It's rumored to be 600, maybe a little bit over 600 somewhere.
Yeah, a little over 600.
I bet you more than that.
All-wheel drive. It could well be quicker in a straight line than the Z06.
I'm sure they'll have a mode where you could drive it just as front-wheel drive on the electric for a while.
I'm glad you said that.
Are you working for Chevy PR?
Like, I'm sure they'll have that. And what a
perfect segue. Because the teaser also showed something called stealth mode. It was just like a quick 1 second look across the interior infotainment screen where they're putting it into stealth mode. So if it's in, I mean, what else could stealth mode be than just running on all electric, even if it's only for like 5 or 6 miles, which if that's the case and the electric motor is driving the front wheels, this would be the first front wheel drive Corvette too. Look at that. Yeah. Reverse donuts, anybody?
Just make it a BEV and it'll be stealth mode all the time. I mean, you stomp on it, you know, you'll get 900 horsepower, Fury. I mean, my Rivian, my R1T, it's got 835 horsepower. It's a pickup truck, 935 pound-feet of torque. It'll run a quarter mile in like 11.7. electric is... has unbelievable performance. You don't need the combustion engine for that. Still sell it because people will want that. But make it in both flavors. Why not, Chevy? And you'll it'll be an easier transition than just completely eliminating the combustion version one day, which they will, and it'll be fully electric. Will. But you know to me it would be a better performance car if it was all electric.
Well, I feel like with electrification in the Corvette, I see something similar, and this is just pure speculation here on my part. But I've been to Corvette events. I've talked with Corvette enthusiasts. A lot of them are higher in the age bracket. The C8 is bringing in new buyers for sure. But I got the impression that the Z06 is the Corvette C8 that Chevrolet wanted to start with. But it's like, no, if we come out with a mid-engine car with this high-revving V8 that sounds unlike any other Corvette, it's just going to be too much for our target buyers to take in one swoop. So here's our LT2 pushrod. 6.2 liter V8, you get the Corvette sound that you know and love in this new package. And I mean, I talked to a lot of enthusiasts that were into it. I talked to some that weren't. I talked to some Corvette people that are like, no, the last real Corvette was a C6 because it had round tail lights. You know, it's, you get that with every enthusiast group. But I'm wondering if it's a similar situation with electric power. If we just jump in straight to an all electric Corvette, it's just going to be too much for them to handle. Right.
Well, maybe you're bringing new buyers though. I'm not saying eliminate the gas one. I'm saying, you know, sell them both at the same time. And you're bringing a whole nother crowd of Corvette buyers and let people, you know, buy the one that they want, you know? And I mean, I just think that would be fantastic. You know, what a performer it would be. And it would be great for the brand to offer a Corvette in both flavors. That would be my preference over a hybrid, you know, a plug-in hybrid version, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just not a big fan of having these two powertrains. It adds complexity. Now you have even more parts that are going to fail, more maintenance that you need, more, you know, complication. And One of the beauties of BEVs is they're so simple. You know, you've got a big battery.
And that's something I think.
Motors and electronic controlling it, you know.
And that's something I think people are going to realize over time as BEVs are more mainstream. I don't have to get the oil changed? No. I don't have to do a coolant flush? No. Oh, well, I just paid $800 to have the water pump repaired on my car. No, you don't need to do that here. There's so many things. Oh, my oxygen sensors are bad. They're $150 a piece. Nope. You don't need to do that. Far fewer rotating parts.
Don't worry about someone stealing your cat.
Yeah.
You know,
Now
don't get me wrong. Things will break on electric vehicles.
Oh, sure.
You'll need repairs. Okay. But the regular maintenance items, things that regularly wear out and things you have to maintain, it goes away. I mean, I've driven over 400,000 miles now on the 7 EVs that I've owned since 2009. And the only thing I ever had to do is tires and wiper blades. Mm-hmm. Now things are broken and things were fixed under warranty. You know, certain things broke, my charge port door stopped working on the Tesla. And, you know, I mean, there are things that will break, but think of the maintenance. You know, in 400,000 miles, I had no oil changes, no tune-ups, no, you know, air filters, you know, and you know, my brackets on my muffler rotted out on my Tacoma, and the muffler bent down. I had to have the exhaust fixed. It was like $600. Like, that stuff just goes away with EVs, and it's tires and wiper blades.
No more busting your knuckles in AutoZone's parking lot at 8 in the night, borrowing tools to replace the lower radiator hose that popped while you were trying to get home from work. Yeah, it's a different
refueling
world.
Think of the refueling costs, what you save over time. My Lightning and my Rivian cost me about $19 at home to fully charge it. And I can go about 300 miles in warm weather, in cold weather, about 225 miles on $19. What would a pickup truck cost? You know, a F-150 or a Dodge Ram, you know, what would that cost to go 300 miles?
And if I had a company where I had a fleet of vehicles, I mean, you know, like contractors, where you're spending most of your time just driving trucks or vans, you know, maybe 50 or 100 miles, yep, if you're running back and forth through town, I would be salivating for an EV fleet.
100%.
No more oil changes, no more fueling stops, no more, and just none of that.
And here's another thing that most people don't think of: cost certainty for your fueling costs if you're a business. With combustion vehicles, the price of gas goes crazy. You know that. Just a couple of years ago, it was, you know, $2 a gallon. And then it was almost $5 a gallon, you know, 9 months later. And now it's down to $3.50. And they have to work this into their budgets. I have an old partner of mine that I used to be partners, owns a big ice cream distributorship here in New Jersey, the biggest on the East Coast. And he has, I don't know, dozens of trucks and vans. And I talked to him about his fueling. He's like, yeah, we spend like $100,000 a month on fuel or more. And he's like, when the price of gas goes up, it can cost me $30,000 in a month extra. Mm-hmm. And electric, it would just be this. It would never go up and down. Now, over time, it gradually goes up, the cost of electricity, but it's a gradual, steady climb. It's not this. So for businesses, that's fantastic. When you have cost certainty for the refueling of your fleet, besides the fact that it costs less, the cost certainty is important also.
Well, Tom, I hope you saved your voice, because you get to be the star of the show for our last segment here.
I'm not singing.
No. I'm not going to ask you to sing, because you drove over the holidays roughly 200, I think a little bit over 200 miles from what you said, from your home in New Jersey to your in-laws' home in Vermont. And you did a video about that in your Ford F-150 Lightning. And it was a fascinating vehicle, and we wanted to talk to you about it, because it was you and it was your wife, and you were driving this long distance, and there was a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, not only about Ford Blue Cruise, which is something, Smith, you and I talked about a while ago, but I don't know if you and I have ever talked about with someone who has actually used it, but also EV in general, EVs in the cold, EVs in the Northeast where it's especially cold. And this was the worst time in the world because this is when my pipes froze. So screw you, Christmas.
Tell us how you really feel, Bruce.
So, or I guess I shouldn't say screw you. Screw you, bomb cyclone. That's how I feel about you. Christmas is fine. The bomb cyclone can go do something to itself.
I need the sensor thing. I'm getting that and like a little laugh box here.
That's
coming
right.
Soon.
So, Tom, I have questions for you about this. I've watched this video, a little bit. And
well, let's tell folks where they can go watch the video at.
Sure. Well, Tom, it's your channel and it's on Inside EVs. So please tell people.
Yeah, so the video is embedded on my channel. I have a channel called State of Charge. It's mostly about electric vehicle charging. That's really specifically. But I also will put up my personal vehicle driving up on that channel also. Mm-hmm. Most of the time when I'll do like first drive videos or whatever, that'll be for Inside EVs. But I'm here in my garage. You can see all these charging station behind me, chargers. My wheelhouse is reviewing charging equipment. So this video is on State of Charge. But yeah, over Christmas, I decided every Christmas I go up to Vermont. My in-laws are in Vermont. Their house is about 205 miles from here. And the thing is, I really didn't plan to do this video. I had just seen so many people posting videos about the lightning, about how the winter range is so bad. And, you know, some people are saying you lose 50% of your range and, you know, it's unusable. And so I said, you know what, let me make a video. Let me see if we can make it. I really didn't know if we were going to make it because it's over 200 miles. It was 17 degrees out. I had just put, you could see in the video, see the tires? I just replaced the stock General Grabbers with BF Goodrich KO2s. So now I've got these beefy all-terrain tires on there. So I'm aiding rolling resistance. It's 17 degrees. I'm doing an elevation climb from my house to their house of over 1,000 feet. So everything's working to go. Driving at highway speed. So, you know, everything's kind of working against you. And I wasn't trying to
definitely
make it.
Are going
to
have.
I wasn't trying to make it. Like if I got 50% of the way there and I realized we probably weren't going to make it, I was going to pull into a charger for like 10, 15 minutes. And I was going to record it and say, yeah, we're charging. But after we got halfway there, I realized, you know, we had like 100 miles to go and it was still saying we had 107 miles of range. So I'm like, okay, we can do this. And we did. I arrived. I actually drove for an extra 5 miles when we got up to Vermont. That's me and my wife, just because I really wanted to drain the battery down to like almost nothing to see how far it would go in 17 degrees at 70 miles an hour. And so I ended up driving 211 miles and it had 5 miles of remaining range. And that's, you know, in kind of the worst case situation. Excuse me. So that's me. And I drove just about the whole way with hands-free Blue Cruise, which worked great. You could see me kind of moving my hands around there. And the lightning did it just fine. But I set the vehicle up to succeed. Number one, I plugged it in the night before. So I let it precondition the battery, pre-warm the battery. I made sure the tires were inflated to the proper PSI, to the manufacturer spec PSI. You know, in the winter, when it gets cold, especially when it gets really cold, like what happened, we went from, you know, 35 degrees down to, you know, overnight it was at zero, you know, so when you drop 30 degrees like that, even though the tires were set at the right temperature, that, you know, all of a sudden I got out to the truck and there were 4 pounds, you know, light of what they should be. So I filled them back up. And that's all really important to maximize your range. You know, you should do the things, you should set yourself up to succeed rather than just cold soak the battery in 0 degrees for 2 days, hop in it, and then drive 80 miles an hour in a headwind and say, oh my God, it's not, you know, it won't go 300 miles anymore.
I don't want to be a jerk here, I guess, but I will say go to Inside EVs and look at some of Tom's stories because he is being very kind and he is calling out a very specific video that he reacted to and he did a fantastic job reacting to.
Yes.
And I think it did very good in terms of traffic for Inside EVs. And even if it didn't, it was fantastically written because he took a YouTube channel to task bit by bit, point by point, and explained this person had an F-150 Lightning. Tom clearly has an F-150 Lightning that he and his wife are driving in this video. And he kind of explained why this person did things wrong. So I'm going to be kind and not call out that channel.
Well, and Tom, I mean, you said it best, set it up for success versus setting up for failure.
Yes.
So
you can
in other
fail
words,
if you want to, you can easily fail.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm sure if I were to go out into the garage right now, just straight jump into my Mustang, which is 27 years old, 130,000 miles. It's been sitting for a month and a half in the garage. I know it's leaking oil. I know there's an antifreeze leak now. If I were to just jump into it, not gas it up, and just, I don't know, head to Arizona on a whim, do you think I would make it? I don't think so.
It'd be a good video.
I don't think so. Wait.
Good video. You could say disaster. Mustang fails.
My 27-year-old Mustang with no oil because it leaked out, and no antifreeze because it leaked out, didn't make it. Like 2,000 miles, Ford, you're terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the thing. As I said earlier, guys, you know, as much as an electric vehicle enthusiast as I am, they have weak points. You know, mm-hmm. they have Achilles heels. And if you recognize that and you understand it and you prepare for success, the Lightning can do just about anything I need it to do. Again, like I said, you know, can it tow a 10,000-pound horse trailer from North Dakota to Texas, you know, three times a month? It's probably not the right vehicle for that. If you have to do that, get yourself a diesel, you know, F-350 mm-hmm. or whatever, and you're better off. I think the overwhelming amount of people that have pickup trucks, the Lightning would work for them, you know, but you have to be reasonable and understand the parameters and set it up to succeed.
So, Tom, I'm going to ask you, I'm trying to find it as we get here. I think I found it just now. So at the end of this video, and you and I kind of talked about this before the video started, you had 5 miles of range left once you got to your in-laws.
Yeah.
And you said, like, even in your comments and stuff like that, people asked about this. So I'm not talking out of turn here, but how did you get home? Because at the very end of the video, you show your wife drove it and she actually got even better fuel economy, or not fuel economy, I guess, range economy than you did. But how did you plug it in at your in-laws' house? Did you find a charger within 5 miles? What did you do? Tell us that story.
Yeah, I'm disappointed that I didn't foresee that so many people would ask this question. Because if you look at the comments on my video, at least 20 people said, Tom, what did you do when you got there? And so I'm going to drive up there again in about a month in the winter, in February. And I'm going to take the Rivian this time, and I'm going to see if the Rivian will make it in similar conditions. And then I'm going to show what I did when I got there. So to make a long story short, as I told you guys, I've been driving EVs for 13 years now. I installed a level 2 240 volt charger at my in-laws' house like 10 years ago.
Oh, you cheater.
So how's that cheating?
You shouldn't have said that, Tom, because you had me on the edge of my seat. Oh, my God. I got to tune into the next video to see what happens.
Just backed into the garage and plugged it in. And, you know, by the morning, it was fully charged. I mean, look behind me. You think I don't put chargers everywhere I go? Are you kidding me? I have my own private network of chargers out there.
Take that, Electrify America.
I'll put one in your garage in case I ever come out your way.
I'm going to stop at Tom's charger.
So that's all I did. I just plugged in the in the garage. I pulled straight in. The charger's to the right. You can't see it. They had the garage door open for me. I plugged in and, you know, we were fully charged by the next morning. So you there can you almost go. Maybe see it if we now you can't. But you know,
I was hoping for some dramatic story. Like I went down this hill and I put it in neutral so I could roll down the hill to
I
get
regen
it to
the battery, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
I kept driving down a hill, then getting towed up the hill, then driving down. I did that like 1,000 times and I was fully charged. So that's your
next video, story. Tom.
Yeah. Disaster. My podcast compadre Kyle Connor might do something like that. That's out of my wheelhouse. Okay. You know, I'll plug into the charger there and
disaster.
Nice
I had to
go.
Drive down the same hill all day to charge my F-150 Lightning.
But you know, I could have, if there wasn't a charger here, let's say, I could have just plugged it into a regular 120 volt outlet. The Lightning comes standard with, well, it used to. Now Ford bangs you $500 for it. When I bought my Lightning, it came standard with it. So let's say I didn't have a level 2 charger here. What I would have done was plugged it into a 120 volt outlet. And then the next day, let's say in the morning, because we didn't go out that day, we stayed there, had dinner and everything. The next day I would have had at least, you know, 40 or 50 miles of range. I would have driven to a, there's a DC fast charger. Actually, they just installed one like 12 miles from my in-law's house. And I'd have gone there, plugged in, and in like, you know, 30, 40 minutes, I'd have been up to 80, 85%. And then I'd have been good to go. But since I already installed the level 2 charger there, I just plugged in and I was all set.
Man, I was hoping for such a good story.
It is a good story.
It is. It's of, just not the dramatic course, story I was
Of course
expecting.
I had a charger installed there. Are you kidding me?
Of course the King of Charge has the charger.
Well,
of course.
I think that does it for our show tonight, though. But yeah, that's a fantastic story. It's a fantastic video, and we'll link to it in this week's post so people can watch the whole thing. But Tom, thanks for joining us. I'll go ahead and give you the opportunity first to go ahead and promote everywhere you are. I know Inside EV, State of Charge.
Let people know where they can find you.
Exactly. Yes.
If you're at all interested in EVs, you need to listen to what Tom has to say.
Totally.
I appreciate that, guys. Listen, this was a lot of fun. Whenever you want to have me back, I'll be happy to come. I love coming on the podcast. You guys do a great job here. So, you know, I'm Inside EV's senior editor. You can read my articles on Inside EV's. We have the Inside EV's podcast every Friday at 9:30 Eastern. That's a live podcast. So check in and you'll see me, Kyle Connor, Dominic Ioni, our friend Martin from the UK. So, you know, we've got a good team of guys over there too, all electric vehicle stuff. I have my YouTube channel, State of Charge. I'm on Twitter. It's at Tomolog, T-O-M-M-O-L-O-G. And if you do want an electric vehicle charger, I give them away on Twitter. And I'm starting a new giveaway this week of a Grizzle E Classic 40-amp charger. So if you follow me on Twitter, you'll get information on how you can win a charger. I'm going to give that away in a couple of weeks.
Very cool. Very, very
awesome. Cool. Awesome, Tom. Thanks for that. Ramblers, you know where you can find us. Motor One Podcast on YouTube. Our articles go up every Friday on MotorOne.com summarizing what our podcast this week is about. You can always, always, always comment on our article, comment over on our YouTube page, send us email. We love email. You know we read your emails. Podcast at MotorOne.com is our email. And this has been, sorry guys, this has been an electrifying episode.
Wow.
Just don't call it
that. Mind for like
the like, E rambling with car. Don't call it that, please.
It's the Ramble E episode.
Oh God, you're killing me.
Look at me. I'm plugging in my fan.
Well, with all of that, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate all of our listeners, all of our commenters, all of our guests. Tom, thank you again so much for being on tonight. We really super appreciate you. You know, we like to joke around. Man, you should have told me you drove it down the hill. And then, like, your father-in-law had an F-250 and he towed it back up. And then you drove. You should have just lied to me. It would have been a better story.
Yeah. Or better yet, I could have had them just tow me like for a long time. Because, you know, with electric vehicles, you could regen the battery by being towed. Now, it's really not good for the powertrain, but
that's right.
You know, some people have done that online with Teslas, but
anyway, that's the equivalent of the bump start with the manual when your starter goes out.
That's right.
Exactly. So, but no, it was a boring. I plugged in and charged up. So, anyway, thanks, guys. This has been a lot of fun.
Yep. Thank you. All right. And we'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.